And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Thursday, June 11th, 1:07 in the afternoon. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our Ag Director, Bridget Riedel, who is live on location again. Where are we today, Bridget?
Today, believe it or not, I am in downtown Fargo. I am here for Cultivate. This is a conference put on by Emerging Prairie. This highlights what's going on in agriculture, technology, and in particular, new startups in ag. And so there's been a lot going on all morning. I look to spend the afternoon moderating panels, and one of the panels I'll be working with is talking about weed resistance with herbicides and what other solutions we may be having. Currently, there is a Farm Voice panel going on, and we've got farmers from Wheatland, Lexington, South Dakota, Davenport, North Dakota, and Oaks, North Dakota, who are going to be on the main stage visiting. So it's an excellent conference held every summer in June during Ag Tech Week.
So busy day for you. All right. Well, we've got weather is turning a little busy on radar. Nothing severe, thank goodness, but we do have some showers out there on radar right now. In fact, if you have any outdoor plans, might want to bring that umbrella as we're going to be dodging a few showers, even a few thunderstorms as well. We've got some showers and thunder showers in northwestern Minnesota, basically east of the Grand Forks area from about Thief River down through Crookston. Also, a few thunderstorms around Manoman and Fauston. And then you get a little closer to Fargo, and we've got a few thunder showers developing just north of Abercrombie. Other than that, a general light shower from a line of showers from about Mayville down through Valley City, all of that moving southeastward. So it's moving towards the FM area. We'll see a few showers here throughout the afternoon, maybe even a few rumbles of thunder, but no severe weather expected. And we're not going to see a lot of rain out of this as we head throughout the day today. But temperature's a little chilly. High's only around 70 with the west wind at about 15 to 30. Then after sunset, we'll clear things out. And we'll drop off into the low to mid-50s. And a sunny start to the day on Friday. Then we turn partly cloudy with west winds at 15 to 30 and highs in the mid to upper 70s. And then a reinforcing shot of cool air comes in as we head into the weekend with highs only in the mid-60s on Saturday. That's quite chilly and breezy conditions as well. And then Sunday, we'll see some sunshine, a little bit of a northwest breeze and highs in the low 70s. And then it looks like rain comes back into the forecast, scattered showers and thunder showers Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. None of those days look overly impressive in terms of heavy rainfall or anything like that, or severe weather with highs through the middle of next week, only in the 70s. So a little stretch of below normal temperatures and way below normal on Saturday. But all in all, you know, we picked up a little bit of rain yesterday around the FM area, about a quarter to a half inch. And much of the area picked up at least some rain this week, but some areas got a little too much, like in northwest Minnesota and northeast part of the state. But other areas really didn't see a whole lot at all, kind of dodged a couple rounds of storms. So at least there's a little rain in the forecast today, and then there's more rain in the forecast for areas that do need it for next week.
And we look forward to seeing what next week looks like. Just a little bit of cooler weather is going to be helpful for our soybeans at this point as well. There's a lot that push through. They don't mind having a little breather as they continue to develop and really grow up that crop canopy. Want to make sure to say a big congratulations. We did have a trivia winner yesterday just before the end of the show, and that was Ryan J. We got our question right about rainbows, and they appear after there's a certain degree of the sun where you can see them. So that was very cool. Glad he was able to do that with us yesterday. So also I talked with some farmers earlier this morning about some areas up to the north and west and central part of the state. They have still been getting pummeled by some of those heavy winds. So if we could maybe not have some strong winds for a while, they're currently trying to build back building roofs, bins, and so forth as well, just like we had here last summer.
Yeah, it was. There was some high winds, that's for sure. And although we'll see breezy conditions over the next 3 to 4 days, nothing extremely windy. Now, with these storms that came through, there were some reports over the last 24 to 36 hours, Bridget. Nothing, no large hail, but small hail. Any reports on any damage, any soybeans or anything out there?
Nope, nobody's had any damage off of hail damage as of yet.
Okay.
I've gotten some pictures of corn laid over flat, but nobody told me why. Was it wind? Did they spray something and the wind came up and laid the corn flat? Was it just because they accidentally took a land roller over it? I don't know. So if you're going to send me pictures to look at your field, I love it. Just tell me what you think is going on so I have some context. That's helpful. Also, pictures or videos where you're holding the phone out the pickup window at 60 miles an hour, taking a video and send it to me and ask what's wrong with that field. I don't know. I can't see a thing. So please don't do that either.
Now, a little more slow, a little more slower and defined detail, right?
A little more detail would be superb. Now, maybe next week with that weather, you're going to take advantage of coming to join us on Monday for Flag Day and America's 250 right here at Fly Family Media. From 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. in the parking lot, all veterans, law enforcement, and first aid responders get to eat free. The Fargo Memorial Honor Guard raises the flag. We have the national anthem being sung by Caitlin Benson. She is from Fargo South High, just a recent graduate. There'll be food trucks like the Detroit Deli, Pop Dog Hot Dog, Penny's Eatery, and the new Breadsmith Ice Cream Truck, so we can continue to celebrate June, the dairy month. There are prizes, and especially for our first 100 veterans, military, and law enforcement, two different items that they can be receiving. And it's all made possible by the Fargo Memorial Honor Guard, Star Fireworks, the U.S. Flagpole Guy, Precision Concrete Cutters, Ramjack North, Jet Black Industries, West Funeral Home, Corwin Subaru, Town & Country Oil & Propane, Homemakers Villa, Went Custom Cabinets, Welton's Tire Service, Thunder Road, and the FM West Fargo Chamber of Commerce Military Affairs Committee, along with us here at WBAY and the Fly. Monday will be a big day.
It should be. Yeah, hopefully we get a good turnout for that, and it is a big day. And when we held it last year out in the parking lot, we had a good turnout, so feel free to come on out for sure.
That'll be on Monday. Tuesday, if you had tickets to the Alison Krauss concert that was originally scheduled for the Blue Stem Amphitheater, that's been moved. It'll be at the Shields Arena, thanks to Bell Bank for helping make sure that effort was handled after business changes, you could say, at Jade Present. If you have a ticket, your existing e-ticket will be transferred to Ticketmaster, and a new Ticketmaster ticket will be issued to you if you had a prior ticket to that concert. Again, that's for Alison Krauss in Union Station next Tuesday on June 16th. So, have you ever noticed that your dog, like, stares at the wall and you wondered why? I haven't had a dog in the house ever, so I'm probably not good at
it. Mine would stare out the window if there was a squirrel, but not just staring at the wall.
I've noticed cats do that a lot.
Yeah.
They'll pick a random, like, ceiling.
Unless there's,
corn.
Like, a spider or something on the wall, maybe, but...
It's very unnerving. You're just hanging out with a pet, and then they just suddenly lock in, and they're like, what's up there? Shadow demon? What are you looking at?
Maybe it's a ghost.
Could be.
Yeah.
Interesting enough, that's a sign of dementia in your dog.
Uh-oh. Well, good. My dog's never done that.
Well, interesting enough, dementia in a dog has its own name, canine cognitive dysfunction syndrome. And there is an official diagnosis for it. And there are six different symptomology that you would see in your dog. They could have disorientation, especially for dogs that are 15 years old and older. There's a 20% chance that they're severely affected. Other dogs can easily start to see this as they age. The second thing to look for is if they have socially impaired interaction. I guess they're just awkward in groups. I thought that just happened to everybody, but a dog too. Sleep disturbances, like having their days and nights mixed up, barking for no reason, pacing, house soiling. That sounds terrible, especially if you're a carpet. I'm pretty sure that didn't go well. Changes as well where your dog is no longer playful and even displays fear and anxiety. If you see some of those things, there can be levels of concern, and you might want to talk to your veterinarian. They want to make sure to rule out any pain or infection as well. But there is a possibility that your dog could be suffering from dementia as they get older. I thought it was just all of us.
Interesting. I didn't know animals could get dementia. That's
yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I think things can follow a track, and you just never know what that might look like. So for those types of things and more questions, you can reach us on the JLA Insurance phone line. You can do that at 701-293-9000. You can be following us on the Lighthouse Commodities live stream brought to us on YouTube, Facebook, as well as Acres TV. when we return from the Livestock Report with the American Ag Network. Love to have you back, because our guest today is Lee Clancher. Lee has been a guy who writes a lot of books in the farm equipment world. One of his most recent ones was called Snoopy and the Spy, about the IH2+2 tractor and how it came to fruition. Today, we're going to talk about his new book on Steigers. So be ready for that when we come back. Thanks for joining us on Weather and Ag in Focus. The best part is when we get to be total machinery nerds and talk to guys like Lee Clancher, who's not only a car, motorcycle, and tractor buff, but he writes about them and has a great, interesting story. Lee from Octane Press, how are you today?
I'm great. I'm great. How about yourself?
Doing very well. So you went from writing about IH and the Snoopy, that was the last book, and I really enjoyed it. Now we're going to talk about a local favorite, the Steiger tractor. How did you get interested in wanting to bring this story out for others?
Oh, this is one I've been working on really since 2013. We started gathering information about it, and interviewing people. The basic thing is, this is probably the best story in ag machinery. I mean, you just can't make it up, right? There's three guys. They've got a farm. They're struggling. They need a bigger machine. They look around, see one made by a company called Wagner, go to the bank and say, hey, we could buy one for $22,000, about $250,000 in today's dollars, or we think we could build it for half. The banker gives them the money, they build it, and that becomes a global brand. I mean, it's just an incredible story of ingenuity and kind of building yourself up from the bootstraps.
The Steiger family started building these tractors in the 1950s, if I'm not mistaken.
That winter of 1958. Yep, they designed in the fall of 57 and built it in the winter of 58.
And they were truly doing this on the farm, in their barn. And others said, boy, I would kind of like to have a tractor too. And that's how they started before they became part of this global brand. And how long were they in the barn, and how hard is it to continue to find those barn tractors?
It's amazing. They built in the barn for a couple of years. They built that first one just really for their own farm, and it was very effective. It worked very well. And then in the 60s, they started messing around with some smaller ones, very early 60s, late 59. That date is massively debated. A lot of this early stuff, there's not records, so you don't know exactly what happened at those very first days. But they built these smaller ones, and a couple of neighbors wanted them, and they built them for the neighbors. So they started ramping up a little bit, and they had a pretty nice shop in the barn that they used. In 1963, they met a man named Earl Christensen, who had a dealership up by Elbow Lake, I believe it was, Minnesota. And he said, hey, if you guys would get serious about this and build more, I would sell them. And Douglas, who's alive today, credits Earl really getting him from sort of messing around with it as a side thing to really pursuing it. And then they built in the barn until 1969, and the barn became quite a shop. They converted it, added on, bought machinery. They were brilliant welders. They built heavy, heavy machines. And the thing that was helping them was, at this time, the farm had been growing massively. Acreage, it's the same story, right? More acres, less people. More need for productivity. I mean, we've heard that song for a long time. So, but this was really going on in the 60s, and the manufacturers, the big ones, were way behind the eight ball. They were focused on selling those big two-wheel drive, or relatively big two-wheel drive, meaning 60 to 80 horsepower. And they weren't thinking about these 100 to 200 horsepower machines. So there was an opportunity. And Steiger was building this great, big, heavy machine with a lot of horsepower, very well made. And so because there wasn't a lot of other people doing that, the word spread. People came from around the world to come to Minnesota and see these machines and buy them from Doug. So it it just grew through the 60s. And it became to the point where they really couldn't stay on the farm.
And this was, they were just three brothers with their family members and maybe a handful of employees who really started this, correct?
Exactly. It was Douglas and Maurice, the two sons, were doing most of the work on the tractors. And John, the dad, really wanted to run the farm. And that's mostly what he did. And you're right. They did hire some employees. There was a man named Clifton Johnson they hired pretty early. I want to say 62, 63. And he became really Douglas's right-hand man and helpful engineer. And then they had a lot of kids that would come in and out and build things. So it was a very homegrown enterprise. And it's so remarkable because, starting a business is always difficult. Starting a heavy machinery business is incredibly difficult. They're expensive to build and design. It's a difficult thing to move. You have farming, which is by nature cyclical. So, for example, if you put all this development money into a new machine and the year you introduce it, the farm prices are in the tank, you're done. You're out of money. So it's absolutely incredible that they did what they did. And it gets better when they get to Fargo too.
It's a real treat for those who are watching the live stream today. Again, brought to us by Lighthouse Commodities on YouTube, Facebook, and Acres TV. You're going to see some of the photos that Lee has shared that will be part of the book. But right now we get to see they're welding. And then as one of the Steiger brothers is driving the prototype of one of the first tractors. I've had the opportunity to visit with Magina Steiger Hallstrom, and she happens to be the daughter of Doug Steiger, one of the living brothers. Magina tells the story of how her dad and brothers weren't convinced that what farmers needed for options. They were sure after they put a cab on that tractor that no farmer would spend $400 on air conditioning, Lee.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful. Yeah. And Magina is a wonderful resource. She was heavily involved in this book. And in fact, we got a bunch of questions. We asked Douglas a bunch of questions. He's still around. He's getting up there, but he was able to give us all kinds of interesting things. This one that you're showing, that's really interesting. This is another home builder. This was a little bit later than the Steigers. Very nicely built machine. And one of the things early in the book I explored is the fact that there were other home builders, but almost none of them, with the exception of sort of a Versatile, which really wasn't a home builder. It was more of a company right from day one. But the Steigers are really the only one, certainly from this era and certainly in four-wheel drives, that became as big as they did. And that's... I think it's amazing to start with, right? Okay, here you are. You're on the farm. You need a machine. You build it yourself. That's incredible. That's a special individual. To get from that to one of the biggest brands and one of the toughest industries in the world, that's why I like to say this is the best story in farming.
Lee, we're going to listen to our bottom of the hour news, but when we return, there are questions coming in for you on things like, when is the book available? How many pages? Did you do any research on the Knutson tractor that was built in Northwest North Dakota? How long did it take to research? Well, I'll refresh your memory on all those as we continue our discussion about the world-renowned Steiger tractors originating from this region. The older I get, the more of a tractor nerd I become, and I'm really enjoying any chance I get to visit with Lee Klanter. He's our guest today, and he publishes with Octane Press. In fact, I think that's just Lee Publishing, but he writes a great series of books when it comes to farm machinery. And one of the most recent was Snoopy and the Spy, talking about Case IH and that particular tractor. But today, I'm so excited to visit about the Steiger tractor originating in this area. And Lee, folks are wondering, how long did it take you to do all the research so that you could write this book?
The research started in 2013, so this has been going on for more than a decade. I would say the really hard work on this edition has been going on pretty much full time since September. That's you know, 60 hours a week. So putting them together is a massive amount of time. We spoke to more than 100 different people who were part of Steiger or Case IH developing machines. The book does go all the way to contemporary times. We gathered more than 20,000 images to select the 500 that are in the book. And we looked at thousands of documents. So, and particularly with this one, in October of last year, I went to Fargo, to Bonanzaville, and met with a bunch of the engineers and photographed some of them for the book. And a number of them came up with these boxes of things that were documents from the Steiger days that helped bring that alive. So that's a great example. That's one that we unearthed for this that hasn't been seen. It's a unusual mix of three different machines that the people out there that are hardcores even won't have seen.
Right.
I think
you're looking at three different models of Steiger there with cab or without cab. And I can't tell I don't know the difference if I can call them the Cougars, the Panthers, et cetera, but these are such well-recognized machines.
Oh, they are. The green and the especially these early ones. These are all three were built in the barn. The one on the right is the first one, known as Steiger number 1, built in 58. And the one on the far left is the little one, the Model 105. They only built four of those, that we know of, possibly five, and those were built in 59. And the one in the middle is a prototype for one of the first ones that was built when the company moved to Steiger. So that kind of brings the whole barn era together in one old photo. As I recall, it's dated 1969, but I'm not 100% sure of that.
Wow. Great history right there.
One of the things I'd love to talk to about is the fact that this story, once the company in 1969 moved to Fargo, and we covered that very heavily. We talk a lot about the barn times too, because they're very interesting. But the Fargo years are just absolutely incredible. The Steiger sold the company out and local investors bought it. And honestly, that company had, especially in the first 4 years, they had a half dozen moments where by all means, it should have failed. It was a very difficult transition. They were still doing things well, but you know, finances are so hard on this. And the Melrose family, particularly Les Melrose, who of Bobcat fame, who had founded Bobcat, and they had sold that and they had money. They brought their money and their experience and a bunch of their people in. And that really helped Fargo grow, Steiger grow. And there's just so much. And those guys were all Fargo natives. I mean, there's so much Fargo history in that time period. It's amazing. And then a number of engineers came from North Dakota State University, and they started getting the best and the brightest of the mechanical engineers would come to Fargo or come to Steiger. And several of those went on to become absolute industry leaders. They developed, in particular, the development of electronics at the end of the 70s and the early 80s. Steiger was a leader in the entire industry. They were hand building their electronic equipment right there in Fargo. So there's this becomes this, you know, the kind of homegrown ingenuity continues in this story through the 80s and actually into the 2000s.
With Steiger, and as well as with Melrose and Amity and some other names like Wilrich and Wishick Discs, they brought ag engineering and machinery to this region. That's what makes the Red River Valley so recognized for what we do. Steiger brought the horsepower. They brought the options. And I remember hearing what you had said before about they were home building their electronics. Wasn't that when Barry Batchelor was working for them and just said, we need this, so I'll build it.
That's Barry Batchelor, who went on to found Phoenix, and that became a part of Deere and continued to innovate to this day. He's still leading and innovating. It's amazing. But he I just heard a story that he had sold Jack Johnson on the CEO at Steiger at this time at the idea that you know, hey, we can do this. And Jack said, great, let's, you know, he said, hey, I think we can lead in ag electronics. And Jack, somewhat to Barry's surprise, said, yeah, let's do it. And, you know, Barry said today, he said, you know, I was 25 years old at the time. I was just a kid. He said, who gets to do that? So what he did was just incredible. And I just love these young guys coming in, smart young kids from a particular part of the world that are given some freedom and allowed to really innovate and lead. It's just amazing.
And the Staker as a tractor brought along the rest of the industry in terms of implements, because the Staker had the horsepower. You now had the opportunity to build bigger chisel plows, cultivators, yeah, air seeders. This drove an entire segment of the industry that was phenomenal.
It did. And one of the things, another one of the young, brilliant engineers is Paul Nystuen, who also came out of NDSU a little bit before Barry. He came in in 70 or 71. He was a freshman in college, and they brought him over, and they were just manufacturing the first of them. And they said, hey, we don't have any good manufacturing drawings. Can you draw it? Freshman in college. He went and did that. Paul went on to become, you know, another brilliant engineer with them. And one of the things he said, reflecting, he said, look, we were inventing the four-wheel drive industry. Everybody knew how to make two-wheel drive tractors, but it's very different making a high horsepower four-wheel drive. That's Barry's electronics outfit there. That's not Barry, but that's his group working on electronics. They were literally on the fly figuring out on the very cutting edge, how do you make a high horsepower tractor work? It was incredible.
And no one was stopping them. Nobody was saying, you can't do that. That was the best part.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jack and Gene Dahl and Jack Johnson were very supportive, very high energy leaders. And really said, hey guys, go, let's go, you know, let's do it. So, I think it's, I don't remember if it's Jack or Gene. One of them sat next to a Deere CEO, John Deere CEO at a industry meeting. And the Deere CEO is like, how do you do this? Cause Deere at the time was a monster. They had, you know, buildings full of engineering teams and just resources that Staiger at this time couldn't imagine. But Staiger in that niche was absolutely a beaten. And it's great. I love that. You know, I like the little guy championing.
You have had such a wealth of knowledge and industry history as you've done research with so many different tractor brands, IH coming into Case, Staiger being rolled into that family. This is a little bit self-serving because I'm from this North Dakota region. Do you think Staiger saved Case at a critical time in farm equipment history?
They were a big piece of it, yeah. I wouldn't go so far to say as saved, but they were a major piece of the puzzle. If you take the Magnum tractor, Staiger, and the axial flow combine, those three things, absolutely, absolutely. Without that, they wouldn't be saved. One of the really neat things I heard in the course of doing this book is that Staiger saved itself with the development of the 1000 series tractors in the late 80s. They were talking about, you know, Staiger got bought. And Staiger, by the way, should not have gone bankrupt. They were doing fine. The banks got scared. So, you know, everybody was struggling, but Staiger was very well managed, just really sharp fiscal management at that time. And the fact that they had developed this new line of high-tech tractors with the electronics, with an advanced power shift transmission, all these things, several of the guys from that time said, look, when it came time for us to get bought, without that new technology, I'm not sure. So that new tech then, when all of a sudden Case IH gets that tech, is massive. So it's a huge piece of saving them for sure.
Tell you what, when you look at where they are today, the delivery colors have changed. They're now the Case red, but there is nothing more iconic than seeing those four-wheel drive tractors. They developed the quad track based on what they were originally doing with Staiger and so much more. There's a photo you're showing us here on the screener that we're able to see of a gentleman sitting on the corner of his desk. I'm guessing he's fairly important to our discussion today.
That's Jerome Green. So, and I got him because you don't see many photos. Jerome was the under the early Tenneco days, KSIH days. He was the CEO, and I found this wonderful image of Jerome in his office. I think he's with J.I. Case possibly at the time this picture was taken. But he would become an important figure. He would help lead the time when Steiger was transitioning from green to red and becoming a part of the KSIH thing. So one of the things I really work very, very hard on in these books is to give readers looks at things they haven't seen. And Jerome is one. He's one that, you know, we've heard about. You don't see much of him. You haven't learned a lot. So you read this book, and even if you're a fan of, say, red tractors, and you don't, you know, only red, and you're not into the four-wheel drives, you're going to learn some more about people that led the company. So
as I look through the description of the book, those who purchase it, you have the opportunity to see some prototype drawings, as you mentioned. Critical engineering when it came to the Cougar, the Series 2 machines, the creation of the all-new Tiger for 1977. And it's 500 pages. This is a phenomenal resource. When do we get to start buying it and giving this as gifts to each other, Lee?
Well, as it is today, just this morning, we launched the pre-order. So you can go pre-order a copy if you want to make sure you get one. We will have the book shipping in October of this year. One thing I would mention, we created a special edition. And first, the 500 pages, I just went crazy. The other Red Tractors books are familiar. They're about 400 pages. And this one, I just found so much good stuff. I'm like, all right, we're just adding 100 pages. And the book itself will be probably 9 pounds. The special edition for this, we found all these incredible primary documents that are data. And we didn't make them pretty. We took 160 pages of this data, bound it together, and created what we call the Steiger Field Guide. And it's part of the special edition package. There you go. That's our special edition mm-hmm. box. And inside there will be two volumes, the regular book in bound in leather, beautifully done. And then this field guide, which is an additional 160 pages of data about everything up to the STX, some hand done things, some notes people made about technical features. It's for someone who wants to play historian can start looking through all these documents and learn about all kinds of tech detail about the machines.
It's essentially an ag engineer's textbook right there.
It is. It is. And actually the box, if you can see, there's drawings on the box on the black part. The drawings are mm-hmm. Douglas Steiger's hand done drawings he did to build the barn tractors, which no one had seen. They were huge. So scanning them was very difficult. We had to go to a special place. Magina and I figured that out, but those drawings are in the book, but they're also on the box. So some of Douglas's handwriting is right on the outside of that box.
Lee, thank you so much. This is such a wealth of knowledge. And again, it means so very much to many in this region who had worked for Steiger, worked for Case, and continue to live and breathe that tractor on their farms today. So Lee Clancher, thank you so much for joining us. I hope, much like myself, I hope many of you hit the pre-order with Octane Press so you can make sure to get your book ready for you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me, Bridget. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
All right. When we come back, we're going to recap the weather as we head into the upcoming weekend. We have some showers and thunder showers on radar right now. How much rain are we expecting? We'll run down all those details coming up here right after the break. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. 1:54 in the afternoon and temperatures outside only in the 60s. We've got rain on radar stretching from Thief River Falls through Grand Forks down south through about Castleton out towards Valley City. A few thunder showers out around the Carrington towards Medina area. Also a few thunder showers stretching. Oh, well, they're starting to die out now out around Lakes Country. But we're going to continue to see with these scattered showers and even a few embedded thunder showers. Now, out in western Minnesota, From Thief River down towards, Fergus. We could see a few what we call cold air funnels develop this afternoon, and typically they're nothing to worry about, but the setup in the atmosphere right now is pretty conducive for some of these cold air funnels to develop. You'll see them kind of dip down from the base of the cloud. They rarely touch the ground, but you might see a few of those this afternoon, but some showers definitely will be pulling into the area, the FM area here within the next 40 minutes. A few embedded thunder showers west of the valley and also into northwest Minnesota. But other than that, not a lot of rain expected out of this in most of the area. Again, that area up around Thief River, you could pick up a little bit more as you're seeing the more concentrated rain. And then after today, we'll start to dry things out for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. In fact, we just had a caller during break, Bridget, asking when are we going to see a good four, maybe five straight days of dry weather for Hayne. And I see Friday, Saturday, Sunday, maybe into Monday. So that would give us four straight days. But then right after that, we're back into the better chances for rain on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. So starting Friday, we're going to at least have three straight days, might squeeze in a fourth day on Monday. But that's about it before more rain comes back in the forecast. I mean, how much can you get done in three? Can you get enough done in three straight days?
Is it drier to start? Because I need it dry to start, and then I need to cut it, and it needs to cure for a couple of days, okay, and then try to get it baled. Because if you have too much moisture in there when you bale them up, remember, bales can spontaneously combust. They'll catch themselves on fire, and when they're in stacks, then they'll burn up the whole stack because there's too much wet moisture in there that creates the heat. So I wouldn't cut a whole lot of hay, a whole lot of alfalfa, if you're expecting it's going to continue to get that rain on it and stay wet.
And Addison, did our caller, did she say where she was calling from? No? Okay. So
it wouldn't, we'd have a longer span of time of it not raining if I'd try to stop washing my car.
That usually does it, doesn't it?
It is your fault, sir.
Yeah, stop doing that.
Hey, Addison, you always loved the Shorthorn breed of cattle, right?
I love them. They're very adorable. I saw actually last week when I was on my drive to Omaha. I risked it all to look at some cows as I was speeding through South Dakota.
You should know that the Shorthorn Association is working with Simplot Land Stewardship Group because they think that the Shorthorn actually has a lower relative risk for a bovine cardiac heart disease, and they might need those genetics through crossbreeding into other breeds. So your Shorthorn is bringing heart healthiness to cattle.
This warms my heart to know.
See, there you go. End the day on a good note for you.
It really does.
Well, that'll do it for today's edition of Weather and Ag in Focus. I want to thank everybody for joining us. Don't go anywhere, though. The Jay Thomas Show, it's coming up next.